finding something I don't see. Operating on sense and ability. You never feel alone, you always stay strong. I often think what you might do when I haven't a clue.
Harula Rose, filmmaker and musician from Chicago, from Lincoln Wood specifically.
Nice.
Because I just read, and there was some local Lincoln Wood press that I just read about that you were featured in. And it's so funny because you've had such an amazing career, right, as a singer-songwriter and now as a film director. And they're still, you know, they're treating you like you just opened up a cookie shop up there. I don't know what goes on, but the
one of those fake news stories, was it?
Yeah, it was sort of. So Arula Rose has done this movie that is here at the Chicago International Film Festival. How many festivals have you been in so far with this?
Gosh, I think this is like 13 or 14.
Yeah. Unbelievably well received so far. Yeah. And I want you to tell a little bit about how you found this. It's based on a novel, takes place in Central Michigan, about this girl who is Native American, half Native American, right? Her father is a Native American, her mom is not. And all kinds of crazy things happen to her, right?
Right. Yeah, so I fell in love with the book. Bonnie Jo Campbell wrote this incredibly lyrical, cinematic book. And right when I read it, I felt like, oh, this is the movie I want to make. It has all the qualities in it that I want to devote myself to, and this character that I love. She was really strong and fragile and interesting. And I like that it shows off the beauty of the Midwest, which I feel like we don't often see. So there were just a million reasons, and I'm happy it all worked out.
And you shot it here in the Chicago area, though, right?
Yeah, I shot it in Antioch, Illinois.
And they, by the way, they get mad if I call Antioch, Chicago, Illinois, in Antioch. So we'll just say in Northern Illinois is where you shot it.
There's Antioch.
Yeah. But it's got a lot of the same sort of topography and stuff that you were looking for. Because a lot of this takes place on a river and in trailers and in really modest communities.
That's right. Yeah, we had to shoot a lot of exteriors and just find the right vibe because it is a period piece. So it's set in 1978. Mm-hmm. And just wanted to make sure that it still had that kind of rustic, organic feeling. And my dad actually was the one that was like, you should check out Antioch. I mean, because I was looking all over, south of the city. And I had initially started in Michigan, but there weren't any tax credits anymore. And Antioch fulfilled everything that it needed to have. There were all these really old homes, charming homes, like trailers.
And you could make it look like 1978.
Just the way you frame it up and the old cars, you can kind of achieve anything.
Yeah, I was going to say congratulations first of all on the film, and it's stark and beautiful, and this is a girl who's gone through and is going through a lot, but you still see the beauty of the world around her, and it's a beautifully shot film. And you mentioned the framing. I was going to ask you a little bit about that too, with the period piece. You mentioned the cars. Obviously, that's something you want to keep in mind because you want people to accept it and not be taken out of the film at any point and say, like, wait a minute, that's anachronistic. It's not really fitting in the period piece.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, we obviously didn't have the resources to have, like, a big wide shot on a street in a town center with all period-appropriate clothes and setting. So we just had to figure out how to do that and not feel claustrophobic. So we still have, like, those factory shots and things like that.
Yeah.
But
beautiful establishing shots.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What?
I was going to ask about what, because I have not seen the movie. I know Richard has, and you have too, right, Ro?
Yep.
But it just feels as if, what is it about this character that spoke to you that you think audiences are going to connect with?
Well, so she is a teenage girl, and it's about her growing up in this very particular way. There's this homage to Annie Oakley, to Huck Finn, to all these characters in American lore that are kind of, they're always men. They're always boys or men. And she inhabits a lot of those qualities. Like, she's an excellent markswoman. Mm-hmm. And she knows how to skin animals and live off the land. But it still feels very authentic and grounded. So we don't feel that far from her. It's not like a fantastical story, even though there are these mythical elements. And, there is, like, some Greek tragedy. Her gift is also her curse. Like, the thing that she is good at, which is shooting, is the thing that destroys her life at the same time. But also gives her new life.
All of those things are happening. And after you've seen it, you'll stop and you go, that's a perfect description, because it It's a timeless. It takes place in 1978, but it could be taking place today. It's about,
or in some cases in the 19th century. You know, there's that's kind of true. You know, yeah. Lore to it as well,
right? Because she goes on this. Not to give too much away, well, I can give this away because it happens in the first scene of the movie. Mm-hmm. Essentially, she loses her dad in a really violent and tragic way. Her dad is Native American, and her mom has already fled the scene. Her mom is. Way before her dad died, you know, had mm-hmm. left the family. Mm-hmm. And so it's called Once Upon a River because she literally has no way, she's got no money, and she's got to somehow find her way back to her mom, or wants to find her way back to her mom and find out what was going on in all of this. And in order to answer those questions for herself, she has to literally steal a boat and get on a river and travel up a river to find her mom. And it is, and she has to live off the land while she's doing it. And, you know, so Arilla was telling me that before I saw the film, the background of this, and she was like, because this is based on this a really highly acclaimed novel, right? Bonnie Jo Campbell wrote this thing. It's required reading in all kinds of school districts around the country, mm-hmm. right? So it's a story about a kid and that, you know, how those like sort of like Huck Finn. Right, or Catcher in the Rye,
yep.
You know, where you want teenagers to understand the you know, the mm-hmm. angst and ennui of being a teenager, and that whole idea of you know sort of being excommunicated from your own life, and that's exactly what this it's a novel right in that vein. But what the unique part of it is, it's set in the sort of the politics of the Native American community, which is so set aside from the American community in a lot of ways. And this young girl is trying to find, between the dual identity, trying to find herself and going up this river to find her mom. And I don't want to give too much away here, but when she does,
mm-hmm.
it is fascinating what happens there, because you find, and you get caught mm-hmm. right in 1978 at that moment too, because yes. that's the only time in the movie where you really feel like it's 1978. Yeah. And it's so beautifully done. And it's one of those movies that, when you, it sticks with you forever.
Yes.
So congratulations on that.
Oh my gosh, thank you. That means a lot. I mean, coming from you guys especially, thank you so much. Yeah, when you talk to Bonnie Jo about the story, she also mentions how, like, Odysseus battles monsters and Margot has to battle, like, these relationships she has with men, in the book anyway. And interestingly, in adapting the book to the film, it's all about like collapsing time and the bare essence of what it is and not repeating anything and making sure that everything is illuminating. And that took a minute to figure out, and then even in editing it. But I just felt like, you know, with regard to the story, I had never read anything like this before. And then the Washington Post was just calling it like a book for the ages between The Handmaid's Tale and Jane Eyre. And I was like, oh my gosh, wow. I'm so happy that this is now, you know, getting more and more love out there.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful telling of it. It really is. And you use the Midwest. This thing, that's why the Chicago International Film Festival is so perfect for this, because especially this time of year, you know, it's getting a little darker, leaves are falling off the trees, so we have to be sleet, snow on Monday, right? I mean, so you get this, you know what that feels like. You know what how dark the upper Midwest can get. And her journey, even though it doesn't take place in a ton of that, there's an autumnal feel to the mm-hmm. film. And there's that kind of feel of, oh my God, I got to get somewhere before it really kicks in here.
Shot in this exact time of the year in late 2017. It was October mm-hmm. and November.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had that weird like instinct about, if we didn't find the girl, because it took a minute to find her, if we didn't find
the
right...
The actress who plays her.
Yes. And if we didn't have all these things line up in time, we would have had to push to spring, and then it would have all fallen apart, and like maybe John Ashton wouldn't have been available, and there's a million what-ifs. But I could feel it, that if we didn't start shooting the day we started, we wouldn't get through it. And the day after we wrapped, it snowed like 12 or 13 inches.
Oh.
So it's weird how sometimes your primal instincts know more than your brain does.
Yeah. Right. We should mention, too, John Ashton, if people might not know the name, but you've seen him in literally 100 movies going all the way back. Maybe best known for the Beverly Hills Cop movie. He's the veteran cop. He was partnered with Judge Reinhold, Midnight Run. Can you talk a little bit about this young lead, though? She's amazing in this
film. Yeah. She's just incredible. So discovering her was amazing because it really was the 11th hour. We couldn't figure it out. I'd seen a number of people and none of them were right. And she just had that thing where she has this sort of inner light always. Mm-hmm. And even if someone's going through a hard time, you can't just make everything bleak about it. And so she has this inherent quality of openness and vulnerability that you want to stay with her and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard to find. And it was the day before we were going to call it off. And I got this one link and was like, oh my God, I have to fly to New York to do a screen test and make sure that she can actually do all the stuff involved. And there's some sexual stuff and just see if she has chemistry with a guy and like, can she pull off the other stuff that's more subtle? And, you know, the camera loves her and she's just a natural.
Very authentic. Very authentic.
Yeah. I mean, and this is, like a lot of those teen literature moments we just talked about, there's a lot of adult stuff in here because this is a coming of age film in a lot of ways, right? I mean, and so she is, there's moments of abuse, there's moments of love, there's moments of things that are so violence, mm-hmm. that are so real. And that's the thing. I mean, what you made here is a film that, again, people will watch, and people will watch for years and years and years and years to come about a coming-of-age story of a young American woman who's caught between the two worlds of being an American.
Yeah.
And that's a forever story, yep. No matter what community you come from, right? So, and John Ashton is great in it, and John Ashton does something in this film. He makes a decision.
Really?
I will not give away.
Oh.
Yes. John Ashton has does have a part
of his... Is
there
a moment?
He has a prosthetic part of his body that you find out about.
Oh my God, that sounds so intense.
I know. Yeah.
It does.
Anyway, that's all I'm going to say. So go see the movie. That's what I'm. That's a good
There's a blurb for the poster.
Yeah, oh my gosh. He's going to laugh so hard.
So, what about the author? I mean, you connected with this and decided you wanted to throw your whole life into it for several years. Have you circled back? Have you developed friendship with her? Has she seen it? Does she love it?
One of my really good friends, and she's in town. She'll be at the screenings on Friday and Saturday, and she loves it. She says that now that when she thinks of her book, she sees the movie, which is an amazing
honor. Really. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. She's just written something incredible, and she's like, I just make things up. You have to go find the real people. You're crazy.
True.
So, there's something to that.
Yeah, she's not thinking about the budget when she's writing things. You know,
no.
Like, oh, we'll set this in a crowd.
Certainly not. Certainly
or the snow,
not.
Or the weather.
All right, so if you want to see this, Once Upon a River is going to be at the Chicago International Film Festival tomorrow night, 8:15 p.m., then Saturday at 12 o'clock, and you're going to be there. John Ashton is going to be there. Maybe he'll take his prosthetic out for you so you can see it there. Kennedy De La Serna, who's the lead actress in this, who plays the young woman, plays Margot. And then a couple of the other actors.
Oh my God,
as well.
A lot of the actors and our crew. The only issue is that John Ashton is shooting with Bruce Dern, this like really cool movie in El Paso, and they wouldn't let him go, I guess. Like,
did we lose
some
him?
Kind of schedule thing.
It's because Bruce Dern, when he tells a story, goes on for 4 hours, as we've learned. He's followed us out of studio. He's the greatest guy in the world, but the shoots tend to run a little long.
I have to tell you, all those guys in that generation, I'm obsessed with them because they remember everything.
They do.
They have this incredible... I think I blame cell phones or something. Like, my memory is not as good as some dude who's like 78. It's kind of nuts.
It's very true.
Because you put it in your phone and then it's there for you.
Yeah.
You got it.
Bruce Dern has John Wayne stories, for goodness sake.
He does. Yeah.
Crazy. And he's an Illinois native.
Yeah. North Shore.
Yep.
And, well, all right, so we've lost him. So, you know what?
Lost Bruce Dern. He's shooting a film.
No,
he's not coming
John
to town.
Ashton,
no, John,
we've
lost
someone just turning their radio on going, oh, my God.
Well, here's what my hope is, that we're going to have, like, a major release of the film, and John Ashton will come and do press when the film is released more widely.
Back.
This is the hope.
Awesome. Congratulations on this. Because, one of the interesting things that is happening now to this young Chicago filmmaker, mm-hmm. is that she does not have enough people to go accept the awards that this film is winning all over the world, not just the United States. So she's just lamenting a couple of weeks ago about that. I don't know how I'm going to get to. You got to go to Madrid or something and come back.
Oh my God, it's nuts. But I can't complain because it's amazing. You know, it's just we've won a whole lot of awards and I'm very, very, very excited. But then you have to have people there to accept them. So it's just been kind of intense.
Right. So Richard and I are going to be going.
If we're all accepted, you'll never see that award again. I'm going to be scratching the name out of it.
It's mine.
Totally true. All right. So, and by the way, if you want tickets to the Chicago International Film Festival, chicagofilmfestival.com. If you want to get tickets to, once again, Once Upon a River, tomorrow night at 8:15, and they're showing that at River East over here, right?
Yeah.
Which is on
great showcase.
East
great
Illinois Street
yep.
in Chicago. You yep. can't miss it, just east of Michigan Avenue. And that is, again, tomorrow at 8:15 and then noon on Saturday. Arula, thanks so much for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you so much
thanks
for having
Arula.
Me.
Thanks, Arula. Looking forward to seeing
go look this up,
it.
Once Upon a River. Right now, Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roadways?